I'm Mike Lubega, MSNBC and MLB.com, and the author of my new book for adults, coming out tomorrow, Robert B. Parker's Blood Feud.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press and author of the new book, The Next Person You Meet in Heaven.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, ESPN, and the Bob Ryan Boston Podcast. And right now I'm in between books, but that's okay. We'll get to that later.
in between reading them or in between writing them?
No, I read it incessantly, and I wish my colleagues the best as always, but they always get through the best, so no problem there. Now, good morning, America, and ships at sea, and our friends in Australia, Kevin and Adam, and I know they're listening. And welcome to the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this every Monday and Friday morning, and we enjoy the format because, and especially this time of year, we have a weekend to look back on, and then next Friday a weekend to reflect and look upon, look forward to. And what a weekend it was. But gentlemen, here's the new theme as we enter and we get there next Friday morning for the next weekend of college football. It will be as follows. Gentlemen, start your abacuses. I mean, points are just being sprayed all over the board. And of course, the most notable ones, not discounting the 74 put out by Texas A&M or the 72 in a losing cause by LSU, but the 62 by the Buckeyes, who certainly answered a few questions that week against Michigan, and in the shoe, it was quite a show for the Buckeyes.
They answered questions, and now they raise questions, and of course, that question is going to be: do they deserve to be in a playoff? And we're going to set up that question as best we can here now. Of course, you've got to wait until the championships this weekend, but they certainly looked strong enough to qualify. I'm going to throw something out here right off the bat that I haven't heard yet, and I'm starting to think, because I've now watched these beatdowns by Ohio State under all kinds of circumstances, with different quarterbacks, with teams that are questionable coming in, with a team this year that had a defense that was hugely questionable. I actually throw out here, guys, does beating Michigan count as much as we thought it did for Ohio State? Because clearly they can struggle with Maryland and womp a Michigan. I mean, I'm pretty serious here. I think Ohio State is a very good team. You look at their record, you know, all year long, they haven't really faced any great opponent. The highest rank before Michigan was Penn State, and they've proven to be kind of useless, and Michigan State useless, you know. Same thing kind of for Oklahoma. But is beating Michigan that big a deal anymore for Ohio State? They seem to do it with absolute ease.
Mitch, you, all season long, I thought, we do this twice a week, and I thought Michigan was wildly over-evaluated, and I never believed them. I know that we now live in a culture where, you know, you have to be evaluated by maybe your one loss or your worst loss. So, you know, Notre Dame got better, so that loss didn't look as bad. But I never believed in them, and especially on the offensive side of the ball. Okay, so beating Michigan get you into the Final Four? Absolutely not. And so I'm going to turn it around and ask you guys a question, because we ask this every year at this time: is your loss, depending on who it is, which team you lose to, a disqualifier? Because Oklahoma lost to Texas, okay, and they got to play them again. And Ohio State got beat down by Purdue. And how much do you take the Purdue loss as when you're looking at Ohio State's qualifications?
Were I on the committee, and I'm so happy it is a committee and not a computer, fallible human beings though they may be, they're going to use an eye test and they're going to use some common sense, I would like to think. And the answer to your question is, you're damn right, Mike. That is an unforgivable loss for a team aspiring to what Ohio State aspires to.
Well, I mean, unforgivable.
Cruelty's
unforgivable.
Let me finish the statement in the context in which we are discussing, which is to get into this tournament. Look, there are 6-4, right? Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, Georgia, Oklahoma, and Ohio State. There are 6-4. And of all those six, the one that has the biggest splaining to do is what happened to you on that Saturday against the Boilermakers, okay? And I'm sorry, if it comes down to a tiebreaker and I'm on the committee, that disqualifies them, as opposed to Oklahoma with its poorest defense, or and we'll see.
Well,
that's my answer.
First of all, I just have to ask, like, when you say unforgivable, so let's say you're a priest and you're in the confession booth.
Well, that's what I was getting at, Mitch.
And then so then Ohio State come in and they say, "Forgive us, Father, because we have sinned. We gave up a ton of points to Purdue," and you say, "I'm sorry, but there's no contrition for that act. You have to go back out in the world as the same way you came in." Is that it? Am I just
going
to be sure
about it? You heathens.
Okay. No,
you
but
heathens
I get it.
Talking about the act of contrition to a career. Oh, my God. This is taking a horrible wrong turn.
But I will say this about I agree with Bob on perhaps not in the unforgivable range, but it's not alone. All right. It's that loss to Purdue and the way they lost to Purdue, giving up a ton of points, was something that Ohio State did more than once. In fact, as recent as a week and a couple days ago, to a Maryland team that had no right to be on the field with Ohio State. So if I'm the committee and I'm saying, okay, how are these guys going to play when we put them in the playoff? Are they going to be worthy of? That's what the playoff is about. I mean, it's partly looking back, yes, but it's also looking forward. Who is going to give who a good game? All right, and the eye test. I have every reason to suspect that Ohio State's better than average but not fantastic defense will show up again against an Alabama, a Clemson, or even a Notre Dame. But remember, they gave up 39 points to Michigan in beating them, and that's their arch rival who they would love to just shut down.
All right,
so
let me ask you this,
I think,
Mitch.
They have a problem on
their
hand.
Okay, let me ask you this, Mitch, because I've been thinking about this. Say Georgia only loses 24-23 to Alabama. Okay. Say it's a great life and death SEC football game. Does their second loss automatically disqualify them?
Yes.
Now
two losses. You can't, unless the other loss was to Alabama, which it wasn't. It was to a team that's not in the rankings. Or it doesn't matter in the rankings. Yes, two losses has to disqualify.
Got another question for you guys. Okay.
And, I didn't even hear Bob weigh in on that. He's in the confession booth.
Oh, well, I got something to say when you guys.
Okay. All right. Now, all right, Bob. Let me ask you this. Okay. So Georgia plays a knockout game against Alabama. For Georgia, their tournament starts in the SEC championship game. Okay. So they're playing a knockout game. Oklahoma gets a reboot against Texas. Ohio State's not going to lose to Northwestern. Maybe they will lose to Northwestern. I don't mean to upset all our Northwestern fans in the media who just lose their minds anytime their team wins a few games. Okay. Do you think if you put Oklahoma on the same field, and Mitch, with all your concerns about the Ohio State defense, who wins that game?
Because
for all the numbers, you do have to sometimes use common sense. Who's better? I think Oklahoma's better.
Oklahoma wins it 88-83.
Yeah. We're talking about I'm very serious about what I'm going to say. I know it'll be hooted down by some members of the world community. As far as I'm concerned, Ohio State has two losses because they did not beat Maryland. They had a non-loss against Maryland because that kid is open in the end zone. You or I or Aunt Tilly could have shoveled him the pass. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. If I'm on the committee, I know in my heart that Ohio State should have lost to Maryland, period. I know it would only be 1 point, but it's Maryland. So here they are. They're life and death and should have lost, but for a total monumental screw-up by the Maryland quarterback with a wide-open receiver on a two-point conversion, they would have lost that game anyway, and we're not having this discussion. We're all human beings on this panel and on discussion in that committee, looking for this and that, we got 6-4, as I said. We have to nitpick. I'm sorry. In my mind, they lost that Maryland game in this discussion.
What's making this so difficult is that you really kind of have the same situation on both sides. Their strength of schedule is a problem for both of them. Oklahoma played Texas. That was the only ranked team they played in their first six games of the season, and the only ranked team they played until last week when they got into the shootout with West Virginia all season long. Now, the good thing for Oklahoma, and the reason why I would give them the nod, Mike, over Ohio State, is they get to play the team that they lost to again.
That's actually good.
And they lost 48-45 in a great game, and now they're going to play them again. They get to exonerate themselves for their sin. Ohio State never gets to play Purdue again. They play an okay Northwestern team. And that, to me, if both of them win their games, especially if Oklahoma beats Texas decisively, I think that's enough to say, hey, they erased the one blemish on their record, the one loss they had by 3 points, much bigger margin of defeat to Purdue by Ohio State, then Oklahoma deserves to get in there. A bigger question, you know, we keep acting like this is the only question. A bigger question is going to be the one that you brought up, Mike, about Georgia and either a narrow loss to Alabama or a defeat of Alabama, which throws everything
into disarray.
Except
Alabama will never drop out of it. Right, Mitch? I mean, they're never going to drop, even if they lose to Georgia.
Well, we live through this last year? I mean, you know, this is what happens, and this is going to be the question. But then you have Oklahoma saying, well, wait a minute, you know, what about us? And then I think Ohio State has to bow out gracefully, which, of course, is never going to happen with Urban Meyer. But they have to say, look, we don't belong in this conversation. We lost to Purdue. Alabama lost to Georgia. You know, sorry, we just can't make a claim that we belong in the top four. But Oklahoma can, because they can say we erased the one defeat we had with especially if they have a beatdown of Texas in this game on December 1st, then they have a stronger argument. So Georgia kind of controls the chaos.
All right, Georgia loses to Alabama. Let's just play this out for a second. Texas beats Oklahoma again, which if they beat them once, they can beat them again, okay? Even though Oklahoma, I think, is a better team right now. And Ohio State loses to Northwestern. Does UCF get in then?
Oh, well, no, and of course they're not getting in under, and they're not getting in now.
The only preposterous part, not preposterous, I'm not ruling out Northwestern. Please, Northwestern people, I root for Northwestern. Okay, all I'm saying is, that it's not as crazy a doomsday scenario as that. Texas has already beaten Oklahoma, so they could beat them again, okay? And then you look at Ohio State, if they lose to Northwestern, and Georgia loses to Alabama, which they should, all I'm looking at is the rankings. Does UCF then play themselves into the Final Four?
Mike, their season went out the window with the quarterback. They're not that, the only hope. That no one's putting them in a game without Mackenzie Milton. That just aren't going to do that. That's you know it. I know. We all know that's not happening. So that's it.
But if all those teams lose, they're going to keep them out because their quarterback got hurt. Even if they haven't lost any football games,
Mike, sober up. Of course they are. He's just what? Are you kidding? That's like automatic. That's not
Mitch,
even debatable.
Wait a minute. Mitch,
I have another question.
No.
Wait a minute. I want Mitch to weigh in on UCF. Do you think that committee would go in there if that scenario that I just laid out happens, and they're going to say, "Oh yes, a UCF, which would be our first Cinderella in this thing, we can't put them in, even though they won all their games because their quarterback got hurt."
It's not like he's an average quarterback, Mike.
I understand, Bobby. You can't.
I do think that that is the purpose of that committee, is to take things into account that wouldn't show up on a computer, because a computer only looks at the past, and the committee is supposed to look at the future. Their directive is to get the best four teams in college football at that moment into the playoff. That's their ultimate directive. You can't say that UCF without their quarterback is one of the best four teams in the country. And yes, they will. And not only would they take that into account, in my opinion, Mike, they would announce it when they made their decision. And they would say, yes, that had to play into our, they would fess up to it. I think that's why they formed the committee.
Are they saying that everybody in that committee is so smart and so prescient that they don't know if the backup quarterback, this kid Mac, could turn into Nick Foles? Do they actually think they have a right to say that?
Or they get an Alabama against UCF semifinal, which turns into an 88-0 win. And then everybody starts saying, you know, what the hell were they thinking? So, yeah, I think they err on the side of tradition and strength of schedule. And now you'd have a much better argument if he was perfectly healthy and they're undefeated. And that then I think you have one of those situations where, is this the year that one of them gets in? But it's I agree with Bob. It's a moot point at this point. They're not going to let him in there. I don't
care. Can I just say this in their defense, okay? And as someone, we all love sports here, okay? And I'm not saying that young Mr. Mack would do the same thing that I'm going to reference here. But who knew Tua was going to come off the bench and do what he did in the championship game as a freshman? Mitch, what were you thinking watching that game? You had no idea how good he was.
Here's exactly what I was thinking. Okay, Nick Saban gets a five-star recruit to start, a five-star recruit to back up, and a five-star recruit to back up the backup. So whoever coming in was probably every other school's first choice. Let's see what he does. UCF doesn't get five-star backups to five-star backups. They don't get the five-star in the first place. I have very little doubt that the guy coming off the bench can compete against any of the top teams in this tournament, and that's why they don't belong in there. With all apologies to UCF.
Super Bowl, we all knew how good what Nick Foles' resume, other than one magical season, was in other teams other than the Eagles. And then he goes out and plays the game of his life. That's how sports works. All I'm saying is I don't think that's a good enough reason if all those other teams lose. That's just my opinion.
It's 2-1. Yeah. Now, I got a question.
Yeah, that's always work with me.
Yeah. Well, now I have another question, and keeping in mind that 2/3 of this panel consists of Boston College grads, and 100% of it consists of people who graduated within 128. But are we all comfortable, and it's just such a given, that this particular Notre Dame team with this particular resume is so automatically deserving of one of these four spots?
I'm really glad you brought that up, because to me, this is the question mark that's getting totally overlooked because it's not controversial. They've just kind of been sitting in the not the driver's seat, but the co-pilot seat for the entire season, and all they kind of had to do was just win their games out, and it just wasn't going to be any kind of argument. But when you look back on their victories, first of all, they beat Michigan by a touchdown. All right, a touchdown, which now in hindsight, especially as Michigan struggled to find its footing, isn't as impressive doing it at the beginning of the season as it would have been towards the end when their defense got together. And then they beat the teams that are always, you know, the Florida State and Syracuse. We tried to turn that into an actual game. It really wasn't much of a game, and it doesn't deserve to be. Stanford wasn't much of a team this year. You know, they didn't play anybody ranked. Hardly at all. And they end out on a USC team. I could see Notre Dame going in and getting swamped by somebody. Now, the reason that the counter argument in my head that they don't is the same reason that I just gave before about why UCF can't stay on the field with an Alabama or anybody else. And it is the reason, by the way, and if you remember on Friday, Mike, you asked me, who do I think is going to win the Michigan-Ohio State game? And I said, even though I live in Michigan, Ohio State, and here's why. Because Michigan has a couple of star players at a couple key positions, but if it becomes a game of depth, Ohio State just has better players all across the board to come in and be the second tier guys. And sure enough, that's what happened. The star players for Michigan, one at a time, got hurt and disappeared from the game. Devin Bush and Long and eventually Shea Patterson. And meanwhile, Ohio State had guys all over the field who were just so freaking fast. And you said, who's that guy? Who's that guy? Who's that guy? Well, Notre Dame has that kind of roster also. They have guys. Look at Ian Book coming in. He wasn't the starting quarterback. Right? When I see teams like that who switch quarterbacks halfway through and are still there at the end, that makes me think that they can hang with anybody because they are extremely talented deep. So I have the same question mark that you do, Bob, in terms of are they going to win? I think they'll get knocked out whoever they play in the first round. But are they going to embarrass themselves? Not with the kind of talent that Notre Dame usually brings en masse to a football game.
No, I'm just throwing it out there because it's just such a given that they should be the team because they're undefeated. And by the way, it's not their fault. Schedules are made so far that the schedule in other years at other points in time could have been more challenging with those same people. It wasn't. That's nothing they can do. They can only play the schedule these kids and this coach that they're given. I understand that.
Might I remind you guys of something?
Yes.
5 years ago, Notre Dame did play Alabama in the big game in college football.
Yes.
And lost by four touchdowns. Okay. They lost by four touchdowns.
Yeah.
And they should have lost to SC. And I understand that's like a rivalry game. They have a lot of rivalry games. But they should have lost on Saturday night. USC should have been ahead way more than they were by halftime. But the best thing that Notre Dame has going for them right now is that I don't see any scenario where they could fall into the four hole. So they're not going to have to play Alabama in the semifinals. So they wouldn't have to play them until the championship game. But I listen, Book has made me take another look at them. I think he's been terrific. And I did not know when they gave him the ball that he could run the ball as well as he did. He had big runs on Saturday night.
Yeah, he did.
And listen.
Against USC.
There's two mystery guests for me. And it's odd to say this, but one – I'm not sure. I love the Georgia quarterback. I love Trevor Lawrence. I love the Clemson quarterback. I don't know how – I actually wonder how good they are and if we're under-evaluating them again, if they ever get another crack at Alabama and we do this for the fourth time. Okay?
So we do agree.
Clemson you're talking about?
Clemson. I said Georgia. And the other one is Georgia. I have no idea how good they are because and their only blemish is a loss to a pretty damn good LSU team.
So we all agree that Clemson will squeak by Pitt. Is that a given? In that and the vaunted ACC championship game.
Yes, I think okay. I think well, that's well, a so, safe assumption, Robert. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Well, but Clemson.
I don't
also,
want the Clemson fans to feel slighted. You know that they were out of our discussion.
Yeah, but Clemson is also you know also goes on you know reputation and deserves to be in there because of the talent that they have and what they've done, and not necessarily because of big. Showdown wins against, you know, top 10 ranked teams. I mean, they just didn't have a ton of those either. The fact is that, you know, you got to go a little bit on faith and a little bit on reputation because these guys don't play each other until the end of the year in different conferences. And so you don't know. And the way the schedule shakes out, this isn't the NBA. You can't schedule them against one another, against the top teams all the time. You're just not going to have Alabama facing Clemson in the regular season. And so until they get to the end, this is why sometimes you get these really lopsided championships and sometimes you get those nail biters. You just don't know.
Mitch, what do you think is the biggest chance for a surprise in the games, in the handful of games left before the tournament?
I'll answer that. I saw such a different Ohio State team over the weekend that I wonder if they just don't have that adrenaline drop when they go and play Northwestern. I mean, they put their whole season into that game. They looked like a totally different team. And hats off to Urban Meyer, and I hate to say that sentence because as a man, I'm not taking my hat off to Urban Meyer ever, but as a coach, you have to. And he got them to turn around from in 7 days from a team that was giving up touchdowns left and right to a team that was swallowing up its arch rival. Now they go play Northwestern, a team that they don't have any particular respect for or hate for or anything. It's 7 days later. I could see that being a game. You know, Urban Meyer tends to pull them out at the end, as he did in the Maryland thing, but I could see that one being a game. I'd love to say Georgia-Alabama, but Alabama has given me no reason to suspect
Yeah, it looked like a game had broken out in the Iron Bowl. Looked like a game. It was 17-14.
And then what happens? They end up scoring, you know, 50 points. I mean, Bob, you said it at the beginning, and I want to return to it before we leave college football. This is an era now where the top teams are laying 40 and 50 points out every single game. I mean, whatever happened to defenses being a part of college football?
Alabama had, 550s this year, if I'm not mistaken?
Alabama? Look at Oklahoma. Oklahoma had some 60s. You know, 56. It's more like basketball.
No, it is. And of course, it is. And it's a trend. And it just... Everything I do believe in eternally that all sports are cyclical to some degree, and this is a cycle, and the defense will catch up to some degree, but I don't know. You're right. The thing about this, the passing games, look at how Exhibit A, Ohio State, somewhere up there in that football coach's home in the sky, what do you think Woodrow Hayes?
You think
is
they
saying?
All go there, or do you think?
What do you think he's saying?
Are you sure, Mr. Act of Contrition? You think they all go to heaven? Do you
Bo and Woody could not watch that game that took place.
He'll be the barfatorium for him, right? They're watching this.
Is that a thing? Wait a minute, Mitch. He does this all the time. No, is a barfatorium a thing? Is that really a thing?
Why not?
Okay.
I want to. We need to go.
You can
to
get
the NFL.
It on Amazon, Mike. Trust me.
Well, we're going to go to the NFL.
Cyber Monday. Cyber Monday, you can order one for yourself.
I do want to say this, and we don't need any more discussion. I know we talked Jim Harbaugh to death here, but as the reigning Michigan guy on the panel here,
yes.
I'm sure people who are listening saying, so what about Harbaugh? What about? So let me throw in my two cents. This may just be a case where Urban Meyer and Ohio State just happen to be unbeatable at this stretch of time. And Michigan fans are going to have to basically say, we're going to have to catch them in an off year, but this is the curse of being in this division. All right. It's like the AFC East with the New England Patriots in it. It's like the SEC with Alabama in it. There are coaches that think they have great programs going all year long, and then they play Alabama and get their ass kicked. There are teams that think they have, you know, we got a chance, and then they play New England, and once again, they're knocked out of the playoffs so they can't get in. And these numbers are unarguable, unarguable. Urban Meyer has not lost since he has been at Ohio State to Michigan. It doesn't matter what coach you throw up against him. It doesn't matter what quarterback you throw up against him. He recruits deeper than Michigan does. He recruits faster than Michigan does. And he coaches better in the big game than all the Michigan coaches that he's faced. And he's faced more than one. It's not just Jim Harbaugh. So are you going to fire Jim Harbaugh, who got his team to 10-1 and with one loss, one touchdown loss to Notre Dame in the opener, to play Ohio State, to go get what? Another coach who's going to get the team to 10-1 and then lose to Ohio State. It's one of those things that you know they're going to have to. Maybe next year they play at home. Maybe they catch them on an off year. Their best bet is to catch them when they do lose the game to Maryland and don't get lucky at the end and then have a letdown because they realize they're not going to the national championship no matter what. But when it comes to beating Michigan, it's just done right now. It's just done. And I don't think it makes a difference if it's Harbaugh or anybody else. So do I say shame on Harbaugh for getting hired and taking all that money and going 0-4 against Ohio State? No. It's not shame on him, and he's more than on all the other coaches that have lost, what is it, 15 out of 17 times already in the last time to Ohio State or some ridiculous number like that. So the Fire Harbaugh campaign, which is coming up now a bit, not as much as, you know, I told you, Mike, I didn't think it would be big, but you hear it a little bit. The response to the Fire Harbaugh is, and hire who? And hire who? Unless you're getting Nick Saban, you don't have some kind of automatic to beat Urban Meyer, and that's where we're going to have
all
to
right,
leave this to rest.
Will the senator from Michigan yield the floor?
I will yield the floor.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Let me just say this, okay? And Jeff Seidel, in your paper, wrote a really good piece about this. Here's a major problem that Jim Harbaugh has. He's not as good a football coach as Urban Meyer is. This has nothing to do with the way Meyer behaved. You heard me say the other day, winning has once again, you know, given everybody amnesia about why he got into trouble in the first place. That's not what I'm talking about. Jim Harbaugh is not as good a football coach as Urban Meyer is. He's not as good a recruiter as Urban Meyer is. And there is no reason to think that this is going to change. And so maybe everybody's hair is on fire in Ann Arbor. But he is not a big guy in college football. He's another guy in college football, and I thought he was going to be more, and put me down as being wrong about that. All right,
fair enough.
Let's go
to the NFL. Let's go to where they get paid over the table.
All right,
for playing football games in the NFL, because that was an interesting. Sunday, Thursday, Friday, you know, we have to go back really to Thanksgiving in terms of the ramifications of the game. But when the smoke clears in the NFL, you've got a lot of really big haves and some almost have-nots. You've got two teams that are 10-1 who are home free in the NFC. And then you got a lot of 6-5s. And 7-3s, and depending on what division you're in, there's no guarantee here. I don't know who necessarily is going to win the AFC North at 7-3 and 6-5. I don't know who's going to win the NFC East 6-5, 6-5, and 5-6. I do know, though, and I would like to start if it's all right with everybody, the Green Bay Packers lost to the Minnesota Vikings. They tied them the first time out. The Green Bay Packers are 4-6-1. Aaron Rodgers bravely stood at the podium and said, okay, here's what we have to do. And he literally went through the schedule. I don't know if you saw this. This is hysterical. Okay, we go to Chicago, we beat them. We go to New York, we beat those guys. We go to Detroit, we beat those guys. And then we get a little help. Well, he's going to need a lot more than a little help, because 9-6-1 is a pretty tough way to try to get into
place.
But
what's he supposed to say?
Well, no, but he could have hung his head and just say, I don't know, we got to go back to the drawing board and do something.
That's not who he is. It's not who he is.
No, it's not. But are you surprised that this would be 2 years in a row that the Packers would miss the playoffs?
No, I'm not surprised. I am not surprised for a couple of reasons. They have the most overrated. They were trying to prop up Mike McCarthy on the broadcast last night. Oh, my God. I said this the other day, and I will. I know it sounds like I'm stuck on this, okay? But he won a Super Bowl. So have a lot of guys. He has won one Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers as his quarterback. And you look at the skill positions now; they don't have the array of receivers that they used to have. You can see that it's just not the same as it was with Jordy Nelson. They found a great running back this year. They never get a stop when they have to. And last night, oh my God, when they've got fourth and inches and they run a deep handoff, just like they ran themselves into a safety against the Rams. And yeah, Aaron painted a rosy picture because that's who he is. But the first thing they've got to do to make the Packers whole again is to find another football coach before next season.
You know, there's a certain romanticism attached to this team that goes back, that now spans generations. Everybody in our generation that lived through the Lombardi thing, and then it was the Brett Favre thing, and now it's the Rodgers thing, and it's the whole thing about the community ownership and the uniqueness of it, and the only sport, the Big Four, that's got a city as small as Green Bay that can compete, and blah, 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 blah. There's a mystique about them, and Mike, you are so right. They're just another team now. And you want to have the argument, which people are raging, or that's all they can talk about on ESPN, is a wasting Aaron Rodgers' career. Are they squandering Aaron Rodgers at the peak of his career? It's an interesting discussion. I don't remember it ever being said about any other individual of that nature before. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't remember it.
He's not the same either. I think all the things that we just laid out, Bobby. Aaron is
hurt.
He's getting old. Yeah, he's hurt and he's getting older. He is, okay? But man, oh man,
The talent they're putting around him is first of all, it's not the same as some of the talent he's had in the past, but I think just as importantly, it's new. And, you know, timing is so much. With Aaron Rodgers, he plays such an instinctive game that if you're in instinctive sync with him, if you know, okay, he's doing this, I know I have to do that because I've played 100 games with him, as Jordy Nelson, then he gets better the more reliable his guys are to him about knowing him. He's more mortal when you bring in a new guy who just hasn't gotten used to his incredible excellence. But when you look at some of the startling things about their season this year, they have not won a road game. They've had six chances. They only have two more chances. They've had six chances they can't win on the road. Against their division, they're 1-2-1. You know, that's where they always excelled. They've lost, including a loss to the Lions. So you can't make, you know, they're 4-0 at home, 4-0-1 at home. Okay, I guess they take care of business at Lambeau the way that they always did. But I agree with you, Bob. They have, you can't argue that they're anything more than just an average team. Their defense is a big, big problem.
Right now, points for, 24.0. Points against, 24.3. If that isn't the essence of classic mediocrity, I don't know what it is.
No, there are iconic teams that are on the skids at different levels, okay? The Packers are one. The Giants are another, okay? Bob reads the New York papers. Believe the pie in the sky coverage that had built up around this team after they beat those two powerhouses, the 49ers, Mitch, you can't believe it, and the Bucks. Okay? They were going to run the table. The Redskins quarterback was hurt. They'd be two games out of first place if they beat the Eagles. They're winning 19-3 yesterday, and of course, they lose. They have now won six out of their last 27 games. They have had one winning season since 2013.
Starting to sound like the Knicks.
No, believe me, they have lost their way. And the Packers aren't as bad as the Giants, but man, oh man, it wasn't so long ago when Rodgers was a Super Bowl champion in his prime and the Giants had won their second Super Bowl over the Patriots that they were in that first class cabin again. Well, now look at where they are now.
What do you think's going to happen in the NFC East? That's your division.
Oh, right? I think the Cowboys are going to win. I think the Cowboys get better every week. Now, they've got, you know, they got the Saints coming up. So that's going to be a reality check for them. But I just think, you know, what we talked about this the other day. The Amari Cooper thing, sometimes it's just one more weapon, okay? Aaron Rodgers probably wishes the Packers had gotten him Amari Cooper. But I think, you know, do I think the Cowboys are as good as the Saints? No, but they might beat the Saints. Do I think they're as good as the Rams? No, but I think they're way better than they were a month ago.
Well, they have the Saints, then the Eagles at home. Both those games are at home, right?
Yeah.
Then they play the Colts on the road, which, you know, suddenly is a tough out.
Yeah,
we wouldn't have thought so, but they're Indianapolis is surprising everybody, and then the Buccaneers and the Giants. So, there's no reason that they couldn't get to.
They could win out, Mitch. They could conceivably win out. They could.
Yeah.
And I just Prescott. I was really down on Prescott earlier in the year. And now he's once again looking like the player that we thought he was going to be when he was a rookie.
We cannot exit football without congratulating Philip Rivers. There have been a lot of big performances in quarterback realm.
You thought he played well? I guess you thought he played well.
Yeah, you know, but you know what? You know, I'm going to say one thing about it too. I think about this actually quite often when they're talking about quarterback completions, and it's always the quarterback completed, and sometimes it's because of a miraculous catch at the other end. And I just want to have a complete aside here that for people to understand. I've been saying this for a number of years. We are such an incredible golden age of wide receivers, of incredible athleticism, of week in week out amazing catches being made, not just one handed catches by Beckham, but other kinds of tightrope work, things tough amazingly around the league. So that I didn't see all the first 25 in a row that he made to start the game. But I'm guessing in there were a couple of pretty good grabs that kept the streak alive. But he was 25 for 25 to start the game, 28 for 29 overall, and threw three more touchdown passes, 11th straight game with multiple passes. He's on his way to Hall of Fame, don't you think?
No.
He finished 28 of 29.
Yeah, so he fell apart, Mitch, after those first 25. He only completed three out of his last four.
The one that he missed was a nothing throw. Did you see that one? It was a nothing. It was a little toss to a running back. And if he makes that, he theoretically goes 29 for 29 and 138.4 passer rating. But the thing about Philip Rivers and, you know, maybe the handful of San Diego, Los Angeles area listeners are saying, well, why aren't you paying more? It doesn't matter what you do in the regular season. He's a stat geek. He can rack up all kinds of numbers in the regular season. And then invariably in a game short of the AFC Championship game, by the way, because if he was doing it every year in the AFC Championship game, I think he would have more of a national profile and there'd be more expectations. It's usually the game before the national, the AFC Championship. Something happens to his team, whether they call them San Diego or whether they call them LA, something happens to his team and he's not there at the end. He's got every statistic you would want. You know, he's got all the numbers that you would want. He's 36 years old. He's been around forever, but he just doesn't get there at the end. And until he leads a team to some kind of, you know, step into the Super Bowl, you're going to keep wondering. So now they're playing. They're always playing in the shadow of something. You know, normally it's the shadow of the New England Patriots on that side of the league. Now they're playing in the shadow of the Kansas City Chiefs, another team that, you know, perennially falls short somewhere in the playoffs.
That one heartbreak loss last weekend, or they would be tied with the Chiefs. And is it possible, Mitch and Bob, is it possible, despite that he has been such a wonder of the season, is it possible that Mahomes in December could come back down to earth a little bit?
Well, it's conceivable, I suppose. I mean, it's new challenge, first time around experience. We got to find out. It's conceivable. Right now, you know, he's been overtaken.
All right, let me give you their schedule. Let me give you the Chargers schedule. We love playing schedule games. Okay, ready? Chargers at Steelers, Bengals at Chargers, Chargers at Chiefs, a Thursday night game on December 13th. Ravens and my man, Lamar Jackson, at Chargers on December 22nd, and they finish with a game at Mile High against the Broncos, who, by the way, don't stink. They're 5-6, and right, they've had playing some heartbreaking losses this year. So do you think is there any avenue with that schedule that you can say where the Chargers could actually win that division?
It's going to be tough, real tough.
That's what I think, too.
That's a tough, tough road to go down, I think. So I doubt it that they'll get it done.
Bad loss for the Steelers yesterday, by the way. Right. Bad loss.
So now we're in the wild card mix. But anyway, you mentioned the Broncos. And all right, Ben, what were you thinking? Forget about the fact that Shelby Harris was pushed away by Pouncey into the path of the pass that he intercepted, and right, and then, by the way, gave a delightful answer. The kid, he wasn't completing that to the anyway. There was another guy in between the intended receiver, right, and it was just a brain, you know what, it begins with an F, toss. That cost him that game.
Yeah, maybe you're a little more forgiving now.
Not allowed to say fart on the air? Is that this is a podcast?
All right,
you can say fart.
But Bob,
you know what, F? That opens up all kinds of possibilities when you say you know what, F.
Just and guess what, Ryan? Maybe you're a little more forgiving now about the poor Maryland quarterback after a two-time Super Bowl champion makes the kind of throw you're describing.
Well, I will use the same word I use, unforgivable throw by a quarterback who ought to know better. I mean, what was he thinking? I don't want to hear about Shelby Harris getting knocked into a play by Pouncey when there's another defeat of Terry.
Mitch, a lot of unforgivable from Ryan today, don't you think?
But let me point out that a distinct difference between other teams when they make mistakes like that and the consequences and your hometown, New England Patriots. So the Pittsburgh Steelers, by blowing that game, they still keep a window open for a 6-5 Baltimore Ravens team. The Houston Texans, despite the great run that they've been on, have the Indianapolis Colts, you know, kind of on their heels. They're 7-3 versus 6-5. Even the mighty Kansas City Chiefs, with the incredible record that they have and the play that they've had, 9-2, have the Chargers right behind them at 8-3. And here are the New England Patriots, who play an all right game against the Jets, and they're 8-3, and the next closest team is 5-6 in the AFC East. And year after year after year after year, the Patriots already punched their tickets basically to the playoffs without playing fantastic football. And this is why everybody has Patriot envy, because, you know, these other teams are arguably playing better football. Houston, certainly over the last few games. Kansas City, most definitely. Even Pittsburgh, until they stumble. But New England's got the quickest, probably, punch in. The Miami Dolphins aren't catching them, and they're the next closest team. And so they can basically plot for the playoffs at this point.
Can they get home field? Can they get home field? Vikings, Dolphins in Miami, which Bob knows that the crazy things happen when the Dolphins play the Patriots.
Well, Vikings they go is a to, tough game, Mike.
They got to go to Pittsburgh still.
Oh, yeah.
2 days before Christmas. Then they get Buffalo. And then they get the Jets. Okay? Wait a minute. Do they get
It's the 16th they play Pittsburgh. I know that.
Yeah. So it's going to be hard for – and I'm telling you, the difference between – say the Chiefs do end up with the best record. The difference between that game in Foxborough and that game in Kansas City is immense.
That's big.
It just is immense.
Yep.
To answer your question is, not really a question, just piling on statement. The Patriots, I don't know what team we're talking about. It depends. The team we saw yesterday, and Mitch is right, it was a perfunctory, you know, get the job done thing.
They did run the ball, Bob. They ran the ball, though, yesterday.
You're tied at halftime with the Jets. They ran the ball. That's it. They ran the ball. The second, the most run yardage they've had in 3 years running the football. Sony Michel had a very good game. And they got back a key offensive lineman. Shaq Mason is their best offensive lineman. He was back. And also, they picked up the tight end, who not only did he catch a Gronkowski type of touchdown pass.
Watch it, Bob. Don't make fun of people's names, because you know how sensitive people are.
I know that,
Mike.
Especially when they're from the south of the Mason Dixon line, I know. did you get those tweets too, Mike?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. But he can block. He's a great blocking tight end, and that showed up yesterday too. So anyway, I don't know if they're going to run like that. They're going to be in it, but no, they got their work cut out, and they're starting with Minnesota coming here next week. And Minnesota, you know, is formidable. Cousins, let's salute Cousins. He had a very big day yesterday, bouncing back from a bad game. And so yeah, it's
all right.
It's,
before we go to the NBA, I want to ask one more question to the representative, the delegate from the great state of Michigan. Okay, and the great, which has been a very interesting division this year. All right, Mitch, Bears or Vikings?
I go with the Bears. the Vikings are still a little inconsistent for me. And the Bears, even without Mitch Trubisky, who, again, they were playing the Lions, so it doesn't matter. But they showed that they have a team. I mean, look, they could have stumbled on Thanksgiving Day putting in a backup quarterback on the road. That, you know, as bad as the Lions are and as much as they gave the game away, you still have to play a game to win that. You're going on the road on Thanksgiving, national television, with a quarterback who hasn't started a game in God knows how many years. That says to me that they've got a more complete team than maybe people are looking at. So, and I see Minnesota, like you said, Bob, they bounce back, but they had to bounce back. You know, they have off weeks. The Bears' defense just is – they lick their chops. I mean, I don't know how to describe that. They remind me of a pack of wolves that just got done eating a corpse, and then they're looking for another one.
Okay, you know, that's all right. Now you're creeping me out.
What an image.
Well, you know, I mean, they're already bears, so I really probably didn't need to go to the wolves thing. I guess you could have said they look like a bunch of bears who just ate a corpse. But anyhow.
You know what that is, that reference? It's unforgivable, Bob.
Hey, Mike, and you know,
it's unforgivable.
Those ravenous Bears are coming to New York next week.
Okay, let me just say this. Before we go to the NBA, because I think Mitch is right. In college football and in the pros right now, are we talking about any other defense of a contending team than the Bears?
That's a good point. Maybe that's why I like them, because I get to talk about defense.
But think about it. Of all the teams that are in play to win a championship this year, when we talk about defense, we only talk about one group week after week, and that's the Chicago Khalil Macks.
That's a really good point. When your two best teams in football arguably play to 54-51 showdown on a Monday night – yeah, defense is rarely spoken of, and yet, you know, I don't think football has changed that much that defense no longer matters in the playoffs. I still think it does, and that's why I would go with the Bears.
All right, there's one thing that we need before we get to parting shots today. There's one thing we need to talk about in the NBA, but before we do, let me just talk as I'm happily doing twice a week now about our friends from Gillette and how happy we are that we have been able to attach our brand to their brand. And, you know, you get tired of hearing me say this, but this is the easiest read I've ever had to do because I've never known anything except Gillette razors. Passed on from my dad, passed on to my three sons, and it doesn't matter which one you're using. The Mach 3, the Fusion Pro Shield, Mitch is partial to the Pro Shield, but you know he's like a teenager still. He only shaves about once every couple of weeks. Isn't that true, Mitch?
That's why I use the Pro Shield. I like to go professional when I do shave.
Okay, but Mitch, I've got good news for you.
What's that?
You can now get Gillette quality blades for your every couple of weeks shaving.
I know that because you've told me that every week, twice a week.
The best value and convenience with Gillette On Demand. With Gillette On Demand, you can get blades delivered directly to your door. Subscribe to Gillette On Demand today and get 50% off your first order with special offer code SportsReporters50 at checkout. So enjoy free shipping, and every fourth order is free. So at the rate that Mitch is, you know, Mitch will only get up that fourth order like every 8 weeks or so. Visit Gillette online at GilletteOnDemand.com and use SportsReporters50 for 50% off your first order. Okay, here's the question. Were you guys surprised at the way Pop went after? And I'm telling you, even though it's the language was not overheated, the way he went after Kawhi Leonard.
No, because we asked that question all the time at the end of last year, during last year. What is really going on? What is the real deal? We did have the inference, or we were told that the players had even had a meeting about in which Kawhi was the topic of discussion. So, no, I'm not surprised it has now come out in the open.
I was, and
I was too, Mitch. I was too.
Because at this point, what purpose does it serve? You went an entire year without bad-mouthing the guy who was totally absent on your team, who still will never know, I guess, until somebody writes a book, what the hell Kawhi Leonard was thinking or doing last year. We spent a lot of Sports Reporters podcasts wondering, you know, how can this be so silent? And all that time, he stayed loyal to him. And even after he left, he defended him as a teammate. You know, he was saying things like, you know, he was a great teammate. This is ridiculous. It's the media. Talking heads have to have a story. But he was no problem. He was fine here. Now, all of a sudden, he gets what I consider a rather innocuous question about Patty Mills' leadership. you know, how important is Patty Mills' leadership in the wake of Manu Ginobili's retirement and Leonard going to Toronto and all that. All he has to say is, well, leadership is very important, and Patty's doing a great job. Why all of a sudden Kawhi was a great – this is his quote. Kawhi was a great player, but he wasn't a leader or anything. Now, did he really realize the implications of what he was saying at the time, or was it something that just spat out? I'll read you the whole quote so everybody understands it. Kawhi was a great player, but he wasn't a leader or anything. Manu and Patty were the leaders. Kawhi's talent will always be missed, but that leadership wasn't his deal at that time. That may come as he progresses, but Manu and Patty filled that role last year, and LaMarcus has come a long way in that regard also. Maybe he's just being factual. Maybe he's just offering up, hey, here's the truth of it. But for a guy who so parsed his words when it came to Kawhi Leonard for an entire year, all of a sudden he can't just swallow that sentence and just say, let's just not start anything. And, of course, now they went to Kawhi Leonard, and what do you think? And he says, oh, it was funny to me. You know, all of a sudden I'm not a leader because I'm not there, and blah, 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 blah. And it becomes a one-day story. I was surprised, Mike.
Yeah, and you know what? You know who think he's a pretty good leader right now? The Toronto Raptors. Yeah. And in a way, I mean, he's going to have the last laugh on this, because eventually he's kind of going to get to go play where he wants to play, and maybe he's going to want to play where he's playing. But one team is 17-4 this year, and the other team is 9-10 this year. And listen, I have the utmost respect for Pop. Pop is not just one of the great basketball coaches of all time. I love his heart. I love his passion. I love his take on politics in this country. But yeah, if you're asking me if I was surprised, I was surprised as hell because, Mitch, just what you said, it was over. Okay, everybody, the door was shut. The party was over. Everybody right. Gone home, and he ran in and he decided to bust a window.
Well, I'm going to be the contrarian in this one. I think that means that there was something that really, really, really pissed off the coach that was going on or happened or the way that Kawhi acted, that they had strong something, Mike. I'm trusting Pop's good judgment.
So tell it, but Bob, tell us. Tell us. Why do we have to wait for a book? I mean, if he felt that strongly about it, lay out what
well,
it
were
was.
Trying to go, maybe he was trying to take the high road last year and he decided he no longer has to. I don't know, Mike. I don't know. We're going to agree to disagree on this one. I'm defending Pop on
no,
this
no,
one.
No, I'm just,
maybe
I'm,
because
d-
I'm just
and surprised.
I'll say this. It's because
I understand what you're... Bob,
I've always
no, no,
wondered where Kawhi is coming from. He's a weird dude. He's still weird. He probably will always be weird, but I don't know. There's weirdness, and then there's weirdness that gets in the way. And I got the feeling that he was somewhere along the way, that weirdness got in the way. That's what I think Pop is saying.
Now, let me throw you guys another, and then we'll get done with this and go on to parting shots. In Philadelphia, not exactly a similar situation because obviously Markelle Fultz has not been around the way that Kawhi Leonard has, but you've got a developing weirdness going on there where all of a sudden the Sixers, he was their number one pick in the draft, and now he's got some kind of shoulder issue, and now for whatever reason, the reports are coming out, he's no longer in their plans. Now, picking up Jimmy Butler did a lot to go in that direction, but is it possible that Markelle Fultz is going to go someplace else? Is it possible that he's going to have a career someplace else, or will he go down as one of the great busts of a number one? He wasn't just a first rounder. He was first round number one.
Darko.
Pick. Yeah. Darko. Well, Darko was number two. Darko was number two. A guy named LeBron James was number one. That would be like screwing up LeBron James. It would be like taking Darko ahead of LeBron James. He was number one, number one. No one picked before him.
But the, Mitch, the just remember something. Remember one thing, okay? Danny Ainge, who is as good a talent evaluator as there is in the sport and has been for a long time, never had any interest in him. He wanted Jason Tatum. He got stuff for trading out of that pick. And if Danny didn't like him, then at that point, everybody's radar should have been lighting up.
Well, the leader in the clubhouse for number one bust is Larue Martin. I looked that one up. But this could be the answer. I think that it's about a 70-38, almost maybe an 80-20, that he is going to go down as a colossal bust and is never going to happen.
What's wrong with him?
Well,
we can't shoot.
Can't make a shot. And they just that's a start.
So
that
everybody just he had one season in college again. Mm-hmm. You know, never a good showing, and not playing for Duke either. But was everybody so wrong about him?
Remember the other red flag, Mitch? If I'm not mistaken, they had 9 victories in his senior year in that year
at Washington.
Yeah. 9
And Mitch, here's the other thing. And again, as they were constructing their team and trusting the process, you know, Simmons isn't a great shooter either. So you got two guys back there. You can see why they wanted to go get Jimmy Butler.
So are you guys saying that if it wasn't Philadelphia picking first, he wouldn't have been the first pick?
No, I think – I don't know. I'm not saying that.
I don't know that. I don't know that, Mitch.
But we just know that Danny definitely had fixated on Tatum, but we do know that.
He was right about Tatum. He was totally right.
So far, yeah. Wow. Well, okay. We haven't had that problem here in Detroit. But you're
so bitter.
Yeah, you guys got a better
Detroit
than the
sports
Celtics.
Scene has made you. It's just it.
Okay,
let me unbitter you.
Let me unbitter you with our friends from HelloFresh.
HelloFresh.
As Jackie Gleason once said, "Hello, ball."
No, that was Norton that said it. No, it was Art Carney.
Oh, sorry, Norton.
Norton.
Hello. Well, you guys are older than me, so you would know. Hello, Fresh.
Oh, okay.
Hello, Fresh is a meal kit delivery service that shops, plans, and delivers step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients so you can just cook, eat, and enjoy. There's something for everyone at Hello Fresh's selection. There are three plans to choose from: classic, veggie, and family. Now, here's how it works. Each box is made up of fresh, responsibly obtained ingredients from carefully selected farms and high-rated, trusted sources. Make family dinners fuss-free with HelloFresh's picky eater, kid-tested, and approved family plan recipes. Each week, there's a 20-minute meal on the classic menu for when you really don't have time for more than that to rediscover the excitement of cooking. So here is a chance to do, basically, you don't have to shop, essentially, and yet you can still cook. You should look forward to your HelloFresh delivery knowing dinner just got that much easier. Feel confident when cooking HelloFresh with the simple recipes that are outlined on pictured, and that always helps me, they've got pictures, step-by-step instruction cards. You'll enjoy not having to plan for dinner, spend money on takeout for an easy night, or worry about gathering ingredients week after week at a supermarket. HelloFresh believes cooking should be simple and convenient, not a chore. All the ingredients come pre-measured in handy labeled meal kits, so you don't have to figure out what's a teaspoon and what's a tablespoon. You know which ingredients to go with which recipe. You won't spend all night in the kitchen because recipes only take around 30 minutes total to cook. It's delivered right to your door in recyclable insulated packaging, and there are lots of one-pot recipes for seriously speedy cooking and minimal cleanup. Cooking becomes something you actually want to do when you get home from work. Many benefits of subscribing, so you can keep enjoying HelloFresh week after week. Get delicious, filling meals delivered right to your door every week for less than $10 per serving and free shipping. Your account is so easy to manage with the ability to choose your delivery date to match your ever-changing schedule and pause deliveries when you go on vacation. Now, here's a really good part. Right now, our listeners get $20 off their first three boxes. That's a total of $60 off. And all you have to do is visit HelloFresh.com/sportsreporters60 and enter promo code sportsreporters60. Sportsreporters60. It's that simple. Go to HelloFresh.com/sportsreporters60 and enter promo code sportsreporters60, and you get the $60 off your first three boxes. Time for our parting shots, and Bob Ryan leads off.
Now, if the Giants and Jets were ever to play in the Super Bowl, we would expect a lot of pregame passionate exchange between the fans. Would that be a fair way to put it, Mike?
I think so, Bob, yes.
So it was like that when Buenos Aires rivals Boca Juniors and River Plate wound up as foes for the Copa Libertadores final, which is the South American equivalent of the European Champions League, championship of clubs of all South America in the same city. But these teams aren't just any crosstown rivals. Sociology is in play. Boca is the team of the working class. River Plate is nicknamed the Millonarios or some such thing. The game was scheduled for Saturday afternoon. It still hasn't been played and may never be. That's because River Plate fans stoned the Boca bus, and in the ensuing madness, police tear gas permeated the bus. Boca players were both injured and with shattered glass and sickened by the tear gas. Now, this may very well have been planned revenge for 3 years ago when Boca fans pepper sprayed, you heard that correctly, pepper sprayed River Plate players in the tunnel as they were coming out for the second half. The country, meanwhile, is appalled and embarrassed because, among other reasons, the G20 convenes in Buenos Aires later this week. Meanwhile, in this country, I hope we stick with rah-rah, sis, boom, bah, you know what I mean?
By now, it's pretty clear that it's pretty much against the law and practically a felony for any current athlete to have an unspoken thought whether it's in an interview or on social media or somewhere else. So there was a GQ piece earlier this year when Jalen Ramsey, who really does never seem to run out of saliva, called Josh Allen of the Bills a, quote, trash quarterback, as he was explaining why he, Ramsey, thought this year's rookie quarterback crop had been slightly over-evaluated. Of course, Allen's Bills beat the Jaguars on Sunday just because everybody has beaten the Jaguars since their coach, Doug Marrone, went for a two-point conversion when his team was blowing out the Jets earlier this year. Now Ramsey grudgingly says that Allen did just enough to win yesterday. What a guy. After another game when his own rather trashy team managed to do what it always does this season and did just enough to lose, this time to the Bills. Maybe the reason Ramsey, bless his heart, wanted to talk about the other team's quarterback was because he didn't want to talk about his own.
When you're in a perennially mediocre NFL town, as I am, there are two frustrations most Monday mornings. One is how bad your team is playing. The other is how much better the used-to-be lousy teams are playing than yours is.
Sure.
Consider our Detroit Lions. Last year, they were 9-7. Not good enough. So they fired Jim Caldwell and brought in a new coach from the Patriots, Matt Patricia. After all, we figured we deserve to be a real winner, not peak at 9-7 seasons. We already know what it's like to lose every game in a season, 0-16, the way that lousy team from Cleveland almost did last year. Which brings us to that lousy team from Cleveland. By going 1-15, the Browns got the number one pick in the draft last year. They took Baker Mayfield. They also had a bunch of other picks and got Denzel Ward and Nick Chubb. Who cares, we said here in Detroit. They'll always stink. They're Cleveland. But here we are, two-thirds of the way through the season. The Lions are 4-7 and going nowhere. The Browns are 4-6-1 and trending up. And it's making folks here in the Motor City miserable. This is what it comes to, folks, when you win one playoff game in the last 50 years. You start getting angry when the really lousy teams get better than you. In fact, we're more upset about the Browns being better than us than the Packers or Vikings or Bears, and they're in our division. It just goes to show that old expression, it's lonely at the top, has a parallel at the bottom. It's called misery loves company.
That's going to wrap things up. I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you.
Now with me, yes, in the confession booth, which is unforgivable. We will be here on Friday with another edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this twice a week, and we're glad to have you joining us today. Leave us a comment if you enjoyed what you heard, or leave us a comment if you didn't enjoy what you heard. You can catch this podcast anywhere. You catch popular podcasts, including, of course, radio.com. And we will see you on Friday. Until then, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a terrific week.